My next guest is Raina Oberoi, head of Index Solutions Research for the Americas at MSCI. Of course, MSCI is a premier provider of indexes and portfolio construction and risk management tools and research. They're also behind a number of very popular ETFs. And Raina is now joining me via phone from New York. Raina, it's a pleasure. Great having you on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
Okay, so before we dive into international stocks, just tell us a little bit about what you do, some of your primary responsibilities at MSCI.
Absolutely. Our group really has a twofold mandate. One is really providing content and insights to help clients solve investment problems. And then the second part of that, is use those insights and our tools at MSCI to be able to actually implement those solutions. So it's really a twofold approach. It's taking research and then making it more practical and applicable. This research is done across different areas. So we focus on global investing, factor investing, ESG investing, and thematics as well across equity and other asset classes.
And for people unfamiliar with MSCI, I mentioned being one of the world's premier index providers. Do you want to add any color to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the index provider part is something that people are more familiar with. I think what people are less familiar with is, us being a provider of holistic tools. So if you think about indexes as one tool of performance measurement, you also want to understand how your indexes are constructed. So what is a portfolio construction process? How can you evaluate your tools through analytics, which is again something that we provide. So really our focus is obviously providing indexes, but really we think about it as a full toolkit to be able to make informed investment decisions.
Okay, so our focus this week is on international investing, and I thought I'd set the overall backdrop like this. If we look back over the past 10 plus years, international stocks as a whole, just broadly speaking, they've significantly underperformed U.S. equities, and that's especially been true in emerging markets. And we'll spend most of our time this week looking forward, discussing opportunities that may lie ahead. But if you had to summarize why international stocks have been so challenged, what have been some of the key factors here?
Sure. I think, it's definitely a very, very interesting discussion. And, given MSCI's role in this world of international investing, we are right in the midst of it. But, to summarize that, I would highlight maybe two key points. One is, it's always U.S. versus international stocks. And I really believe that in the last few years, there's been this love for U.S. stocks. But, is that really something that's going to prevail? Because if you, think about from an investor standpoint, the MSCI USA index, which is, the primary benchmark that we use, has 600 stocks. So from investor standpoint, who thinks U.S. equities has been doing well, also thinks that, my portfolio is quite diversified because I have exposure to all these 600 stocks. What is my need to go outside the U.S. when I'm actually getting all these returns here and actually U.S. equities are doing better? But if you actually look beneath the hood, there are only a handful of stocks in the U.S. that are driving the performance of this market. So just to give you some stats, just put things in perspective, the top 10 assets in the U.S. account for 26% of the weight of the MSCI USA index. Whereas if you look at the world ex-U.S., the same top 10 assets would account for about 11% of the weight. So you can see that there is a lot more concentration in the U.S. market versus the non-U.S. market, and which is why there is some sense that maybe it's not the entire market that's rallying. It's just a few stocks that have become so big that they are rallying the market. The other point that you mentioned in particular is emerging markets. And look, emerging markets have experienced, volatile performance. That's obviously been driven by, changes in monetary policy. There's been obviously increasing political uncertainty. And there's also been, deteriorating conditions for international trade. And in fact, some people call the fact that globalization never recovered since, 2008, the financial crisis. So the question really is this a temporary effect and is this going to last forever? Or, does emerging markets or international equity still remain a distinct part of your portfolio? Now, we've seen in the past that it's not always that U.S. equities have always outperformed. There have been significant periods of outperformance for international equities over U.S. equities as well. And just to give you some context, you know, for some who might feel that emerging markets in particular, you know, are just a small sliver and may not be as warranted as the rest of the market, if you think about MSCI's emerging market index, which was built in 1987, right, it was 1% of what we call the ACWI index, which is our Global Developed Markets Plus Emerging Markets Index, the All Country World Index. Now, obviously, there's been dramatic growth. And as you see today, there are 26 countries in emerging markets, and that accounts for about 12% of the MSCI ACWI index. So you see that this pie has grown, and which is why, you know, there is still those benefits of allocating to emerging markets. There is obviously higher economic growth that has historically shown positive returns. There still remains low correlation within amongst countries within emerging markets. And there is still relatively scarce information in emerging markets for some opportunities for active management. So I don't think, you know, we need to, you know, diss international equity, because what past has taught us is that there are times where the U.S. outperforms, but then there are long periods of time where international equities outperform. So diversification is really the key point here.
If we look at the current landscape, you mentioned this move towards deglobalization. And, you know, looking ahead, that may shift somewhat with a new administration in the U.S. We'll see. But we also obviously still have the world dealing with a coronavirus pandemic and all of the economic ramifications of that. What's your read on the overall international environment right now? Again, if you had to paint with a broad brush.
So that, again, you know, is a debatable question, right? So, you know, some feel that you know, this pandemic is going to accelerate deglobalization. So, you know, the view is that companies may rely on producing more at home, be less reliant on other countries. You know, governments may pose some greater restrictions across flow of information, goods, services, etc. And maybe investors will be convinced that they need to reduce their international portfolio allocations. You know, from my point of view, I definitely think that it will be detrimental for growth if deglobalization continues. But there is, you know, this other camp, and I am actually on that camp, is that actually this might strengthen the case for globalization. Now, we talk about the pandemic as a virus, but if you think about climate change, that too is a pandemic. It's affecting everyone. So think about how can one country fight this virus, or how can one country fight climate change? It has to be collective action across the board, across the globe. And I think that, you know, is more of a reason and an argument for bringing all these governments together and work together, even though they disagree on many other things. You know, it's something that I always put forth just to put things in perspective that, you know, North American companies, if you think about it, right, they cover about 60% in terms of market cap of the overall MSCI ACWI index. But if you think about in terms of revenues, they are only contributing to 30% of global revenues. Now, do you want to be you know, that investor who's missing that 70% of global revenues, which is actually coming outside this region?
So, Raina, on that note, as you think about potential opportunities on the horizon, I'm curious, what are you watching for? And I'll add to that question, what should be the mindset for investors who haven't seen returns here and they may be hesitant to look internationally? What's the overall investment case?
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many different ways you could, you know, slice this pie of international investing. And, you know, my main point really here is that the world is no longer in silos. So if you are a U.S. investor and you think you are only invested in U.S. companies, one example, you know, which we recently looked at was, if you look at the MSCI USA index and you screen for companies that are getting majority of their revenues from the U.S., which is domestic, and then now you compare these same companies and see which are the companies that are getting majority of the revenues from, say, emerging markets. And you'll actually see that the ones that are exposed to emerging markets in terms of revenues have actually outperformed the domestic revenue-generating companies since a few years. So again, the idea is that you know, you may think that you are exposed to the U.S. only, but the world is not binary anymore, and it's a big mishmash of all these different things. So your exposures are quite global, even though you may think they are not. You know, in terms of so obviously looking at the world, not only from just where the companies are based, but looking at where are they generating their revenue from, and because those aspects will affect any portfolio. The other thing which is really key, and you know, we are seeing a lot of clients look at this, is on thematics or mega trends. Now, MSCI has a suite of such indexes, and what really this is it's really trying to capture long-term structural trends. So this is not a sector allocation, it's not a factor allocation, it's not an ESG allocation. It's actually its own unique lens, which is capitalizing on a more forward-looking way of evaluating trends which are going to change or have already changed, and it will compel business models and value chains of companies to actually significantly change, and how can investors capture these opportunities. Now, I'll give you an example. You know, for those who think the U.S. is, you know, the most thriving place to capture innovative opportunities, and no question, there is a lot of innovation in the U.S. But if you think about all these different themes, you notice that, you know, the U.S. is great if you want exposure, for example, to internet innovation, cybersecurity, genomic innovation. But if you actually think about other areas such as efficient energy or future mobility, how are we going to drive? Is it going to be autonomous driving, smart cities? How do we build buildings that are emitting zero emissions? All these aspects are actually much, much more pronounced outside the U.S. So if you want to capture all these structural themes and long-term opportunities of growth, just staying in one country or one region may not be enough for you to be able to actually capture the full breadth of these opportunities. You know, a couple of other things which I just quickly want to highlight is also, you know, in terms of sustainability. Now, you know, there's been this long trend of, you know, environmental, social, and governance characteristics being incorporated in client portfolios. And, you know, initially there was this whole thought that maybe it's a bubble and, you know, maybe it's just used for risk mitigation. It really doesn't have alpha attached to it, what we call ESG investing. And what we've seen actually through the pandemic, and it was a real test of resilience, is that actually ESG-based strategies actually had lower drawdowns compared to the broader market. And that is actually a good test. And we also saw them outperform their broader market. So there is, again, there is this, you know, ESG phenomenon or sustainability phenomenon that is, again, pervasive, which is, again, not only restricted to the U.S., but globally.
Raina, just a couple of minutes left. You mentioned the different types of indexes available, the different exposures available. You just walked through some of those. And I'm curious, given your role with index construction, I always like to discuss the topic of due diligence on this podcast. And clearly, there are many different ways to slice and dice markets around the globe. Can you just talk about the importance of index construction and perhaps offer some words of wisdom to investors as they evaluate broad international exposure?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there are like two steps here, which I think are very important. So any investor trying to access any market should require and need full transparency. And I think the index provider should be providing that. You know, from MSCI standpoint, we take two steps here. The first step is really identifying the market. Is it a developed market? Is it an emerging market? Is it a frontier market? And the reason that is important is, in addition to just economic and regulatory reasons or information that investors might need, investors want to understand how accessible are these markets for me. Can I easily, you know, set up an account? Can I repatriate my money if I need to? How liquid, how accessible are the stocks of these underlying markets? So those are accessibility criteria, which actually MSCI releases on 84 markets globally every year to tell you across all these different criteria, how easy is any particular country to access and where are the issues? And based on that, we actually classify these countries. Now, once that is done, we actually focus on building the actual index. So if you think about the All Country World Index, which is, you know, which constitutes of developed markets and emerging markets, that again becomes the foundation or the building block of any strategy. So that is tested, it's rules-based, it's tested for liquidity, it's tested for investability. If you're a foreign investor, how much can a foreigner own of a particular stock. All those things have to be factored in, because at the end of the day, if this index is going to be the underlying of an ETF or another financial product, it needs to be replicable, and investors need to know what they really own. And I think that's what one of the key reasons why indexing has become so popular, because it's, you know, some have gotten burned back in the financial crisis because of black box strategies. And, you know, what we speak to our clients is you should demand the transparency. And if you don't understand the underlying index, you should make sure that you understand it, and someone should be able to explain it to you in terms of what it's capturing, what kind of turnover is generating, how it's rebalanced, etc. So those are all important criteria, but I do think transparency is key.
Well, very well said. I think an excellent note to end on. Raina, tremendous perspective on international investing. An absolute pleasure connecting with you. Thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you for having me.
That was Raina Oberoi, Head of Index Solutions Research for the Americas at MSCI.